clearly there is an expectation that we reduce our work levels, but I shall keep you working until you earned your money today, honourable members. I have, unfortunately, a number of apologies. The honourable could see he is not going to be here today. He has given notice some time ago that his wife was had to attend an hospital and he had to accompany her. The honourable Jacobus is also still ill. We received a medical update on she's had problems with her eye. She had some laser treatment that she's had to go back for further treatment. The Honourable Diali has a bereavement in the family and he's been excused by Parliament to attend to that. We were informed yesterday that the Honourable Mentor is also taken ill. And I'm informed that the Honourable Masisiya has an appointment with the Minister in Pretoria. Those are the apologies, Honourable Members. Are there any other apologies that... I see no reason why these Honourable Members should not be excused. They have all submitted written apologies, including the Honourable Mentor. Honourable Members, when we last met, you will recall we were dealing with a proposal that had come from the ANC of this review panel, and you will recall that when we closed, I asked you also to consider looking at the whole section and to see whether it is won't be proper to write into the whole bill a new section that deals with reviews and appeals. Because presently, where we were in the bill, we did not have such a section. Do the honourable members remember those things? So I take it that the honourable members have applied their minds, that we can then continue with some fruitful deliberations on the topic. The review panel, honourable members. Yes, honourable Landers.
Chairperson, you'll recall that we provided members with a document setting out our proposal with regard to the review panel. Members then posed certain questions for purposes of clarity, and we agreed that at our last meeting that we would at the next meeting attempt some responses. Amongst other things, because as ANC we have discussed this panel at some length, but Mr. Ambrosini, who's unfortunately not here, did pose the question, but what happens when an organ of state fails or refuses to conduct a review? And that's one of the roles and functions of the review panel, is to ensure that that actually happens, and where it doesn't happen, to report on the matter. Mr. Ambrosini did raise the prospect of sanctions or penalties. That is something we can look at. We've not taken a position either way on that particular matter. The question of its independence, I think Mr. Mania raised. This is not a Chapter 9 institution or a public protector type of body. It's just three or five individuals who will have other occupations. They won't be permanent review panels. Because if you're reviewing every 10 years, well, you know, that would be a cushy job. I wouldn't mind having it, as I'm sure others. So the people would be occupied in other work, and this would be as and when necessary. They would be called in to conduct reviews. As regards their independence, when we speak of their independence, it's independent from the classifying authority. So the panelists won't in any way be engaged in classification of information. And they won't in any way be attached. Remember, the classification authority is the head of the organ of state or the person delegated to carry out that task by the head of the organ of state. So the panelists then will be independent of those classifying authorities. Concern was expressed by Mr. Mania about the fact that the JSCI, to whom it will report, meets behind closed doors. Well, we're dealing with classified information. It's not the number of babies who died at the Mahatma Gandhi Hospital as a result of Klebsiella and such like. Classified information, and we can't see that Parliament in general should be dealing with such matters. I have served on the JSCI since its inception, and I can speak as to its integrity. I know that a lot of people skeptical about it, but there's really no need. It does excellent work. I can vouch for that. But at the very least, they have the authority, when they feel it's necessary, to issue reports on matters, notwithstanding the sensitivity of the nature of information they deal with. They do have that authority. Then, Chairperson, the Honourable Dean Smuts did also make one or two important points, I believe. The full-time and part-time issue I've addressed. She also raised the fact that at least one member of the panel should be a person with expertise, experience, in matters dealing with media freedom and access to information. I suppose we can put that in the Act. Nothing wrong with it. And whether the RICA judge shouldn't be part of this, well, I just put it out there to remind the committee. We've not taken a position on this matter either. I think I've also in the process, members will remind me if I've omitted something, Mr. Swart, I think I've covered yours as well. In your absence, you see, I always tell you, Mr. Ambrosini, when you're not yet, good things happen. I think I've dealt with Mr. Ambrosini, but I'll convey my responses to him informally, Chairperson. But if there are further questions, we'll try and address them.
Thank you, Chair. First, just two clarifications or corrections on my positions or the questions I asked, because the Honourable Landers has covered, I think, almost everything everyone said. I did, in addition, but not as a proposal, add that the model that has worked the very best of all is the appointment mechanism for the IEC, because over and above the parliamentary committee that does the final selection, there's a a committee that kicks off the process, consisting of the Chief Justice, one Human Rights Commissioner, Public Protector, one person gender, and they advertise, they interview, they make the shortlist. So just please put that in the back of your mind. That's another. But that is now for Chapter 9 standard independent body, right? And Chair, and just the other slight correction, our proposal has all along been for the RICA judge as the appeal authority for Clause 25, right? This concerns the requests for status review of classified information under Clause 23, and then the appeal procedure in Clause 25, which at present consists of the minister. That is where we have proposed that, because that really is where you need an appeal body when someone has a request has been turned down. That's really where you need a judge. But may I, you can tell me, Chair.
Chair, would you mind repeating that, just this last part?
Yes. Our position, our request for a judge, whom we thought should be the RICA judge, but a judge, has always pertained to clauses 23 and 25. If you remember, Doctor, the dual avenue of access to it. All right, okay. That's where we wanted the judge. Chair, now you can tell me to stop at this point, but what I would like to do is to ask for help in understanding exactly what the panel will do, because I looked at it again and thought about it again, and it's obviously the proposers and the sponsors of the panel that will have the answers. Please just help me with this. Your 22.1A, the panel must conduct on own volition the application of the classification manual contemplated in 13.4 in all organs of state. Now, what does that mean? The manual is presumably the manual that you have added to Clause 15, the classification threshold, is that manual. So it deals, in other words, with the standards, the criteria for classification, right? The second most important thing in the bill. Now, what is it we're asking this panel to do? Are we not asking it to conduct a compliance implementation, but doesn't that apply compliance with the manual and what it does? Because if that is the case, then that is quite a big job. Yeah. Yeah. I think that you see, is very good. That is the most important thing this panel could do. But then you do want to be sure that its independence is sufficiently strong, and perhaps independence from the executive, not just the classifying authority. And what strikes me is, if indeed that is what its first job is, that is a big job. If you are actually going to study each given department's compliance, how will you do that? You're not going to inspect each and every instance and see whether there's a written justification or whether the person applied their mind. Are you going to do what the Auditor General does? The Auditor General does a regularity audit. It's not that he looks at every single thing. Dr. Ambrosini will help us. But so a modality, because presumably your panel isn't going to look at absolutely every single classified document. So I leave that there. And then the other thing that I need help with, Chair, the bill as drafted requires a review every 10 years on the status, and it kicks off at the commencement of the bill. And that does imply that everybody will be doing their reviews every 10 years, and that there will then be a load of, no, not material. That's where each department must tell the panel, yes, we did, no, we didn't. But the panel must then go and find out whether they're lying or not, right? So it's not the case, as in C, that they will receive once a year all reviews on status of classified information. Because if everybody's going to do it every 10 years, then is that period not out? But you will help me on that. And let me leave it there for now, but that's what I've been puzzled about so far.
I have the Honourable Swartz, the Honourable Abrasini, and then the Honourable Mania. Honourable Swartz first, then the Honourable Abrasini.
Thank you, Chair. And as I indicated last week, this is a step in the right direction, and I'm grateful for the opportunity just to be able to further explore what is meant by the panel. What my question was last week, what exactly is it going to do? And I'm starting to get a better understanding when you said the organ of state would still conduct the reviews and the appeals, but this is a higher level to then look at it. The question then would be, would they then of their own accord be able to again review? And one assumes they would, should there not be compliance with that manual as is referred to in A. But we might want to just, under C, 22.1C, make it clear that when they receive once a year all reviews, we need to build in that power a bit more clearer as to what they're going to do. We say they will conduct the application of the classification manual. That might cover it. But do we not need to say, and then once receiving it, they receive it, but what are they going to we've got to give them the power conduct a further review, or we need to just look at that, whether it's sufficiently covered. I'm not so sure. That's when I read it initially, I wasn't sure exactly what they are doing. They receive the report of the reviews. They look at it. If it complies, if not, then they send it back. Do they have the power? And we're going to have to give them certain powers. We're establishing something that we're going to have to give them the functions and powers. There was a useful document that was circulated to all members some time ago by the Open Democracy Centre on a declassification board, which I can also hand in to the chair at some stage. You might want to just look at where they just set out interesting, just how to set up a board. And what is interesting, just my question about the composition of this panel, you'll recall that I said that the appointment must be a transparent process, and I think we agree with that, and I agree with your views on the judicial services, the review, the intelligence committee, that it has credibility, but the process of appointing, we need that it appoints credible and independent people that will have the authority. And you recall I suggested to look at the Human Rights Commission as well because of the involvement with prior legislation. Now, there is a suggestion in that Open Democracy Centre document of the declassification panel that they propose on the wording to appoint 5 individual persons on the basis of their knowledge, experience, and involvement pertaining to access to information, constitutional law, and national security. These are some of the wordings we can look at as we're going along to look at this the panel as set up. So that to me is just the crux, is to make sure that we give the exact wording to this panel, and then we can set up the further, for example, at the end of the document where you say under 3C, must be available to fulfill his or her role. I think there are pretty much standard regulations that one can put in for setting up a panel on the availability, the criteria. You recall a person must be an unrehabilitated, insolvent, or judicially declared of sound mind. Those are pretty standard that are in the suggestion that one can take things out. So one can be look at that as well. Thank you, Chair.
The ODAC document...
I didn't say yes.
May I?
No. I have not yet said yes. Is it something that the Honourable Swartz had said? Honourable Swartz, clarification? Honourable Swartz, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Honourable Swartz, the ODAC document sounds really interesting, and I've forgotten it. And can you just indicate what is the function of the panel they proposed?
That the proposal was a declassification board, and that was the way they set it up. But I'm just taking from that the way the wording of setting up a similar, they refer to a declassification board that is established, but I'm setting up from that the principles to set up a panel that might well also have a function of declassifying, reclassifying. So one can take the similar principles from that, what type of people do we need, how is it appointed, and how will those members serve. So they're just to pick up general principles that I found quite useful. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize to you privately, I do so publicly, for my intermittent attendance, which will be more so as I need to go splitting myself between two committees. I wish to address you and colleagues through you on a number of points relating to this document without repeating what I said last meeting, which I understand the Honourable Lambert has addressed. First, it seems that perhaps there is no sufficient differentiation between two functions. The one is that of government ensuring internal compliance and functioning of government. And the other one is that of the interface between the non-government, the citizenry, and government in point of classification and secrecy. What we have before us addresses exclusively the need of government to make sure that government follows government rules. It is not, as portrayed here, a mechanism which would enable a citizen to challenge a classification. So there are other provisions in the bill which address that. So this is not responsive to this need as presented. That need will remain. And that is the need for any citizen, and we discuss with what type of qualifications, what type of interest, what type of standing, to approach an independent panel or independent mechanism to challenge a classification or to challenge the need, the persistent need for a classification, or to challenge a classification against the countervailing need. And there are three or four of those. First of all, the need of using the information to defend themselves in a criminal procedure. I will submit to you the public interest, etc., etc. But that is a different animal. We can discuss whether the two animals should be merged in a single body, but there are two different functions. Number one. Number two, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I would like to address you and through your colleagues about the issue of the manual. The manual was in the original ANC proposals in 15 sub 4. It's been taken out from 15 sub 4, so it's no longer there. Here it appears, or would appear, for the first time. The old apartheid government was big on manuals. The, in Home Affairs alone, there was a diplomatic manual and the immigration manual, the diplomatic code and the immigration code. Those were internal documents, which each the status of which was granted, was given by the obligation which each relevant official would undertake the obligation that each relevant official undertook to respect the manual in the exercise of its function as a condition of receiving the manual. The manual was not public, so with the absurdity of the criteria in terms of which one could receive immigration benefit not being available to those who applied for. Now, we need to look at what this animal is in terms of the hierarchy of sources of law. It's not a law, it's not a regulation, it's not a guideline, but we make reference to it in the law, in the statute. And that creates in me, against the backdrop of this type of old culture which has persisted in the intelligence community, an enormous amount of uneasiness. Why do I say that it's persisted in the immigration, in the intelligence community? Because the MISA is exactly such manual. The MISA is a classified document, classified, restricted, which creates the criteria under which people can be punished, but is not a public document.
So if this is the same animal we are talking about, it's anathema to everything is enshrined in the Constitution. It needs to be regulations. Now, whatever it is, that's my next point. This panel under 22 sub 1 sub A will have the function of making sure it gets applied. Whether they conduct implementation, they certify the review, they are the policemen, those who police the effectiveness of that manual within all the other organs of state. That creates a different function from what we've been discussing until now. Until now, we've been proceeding on the basis of the minister setting up regulations in terms of seven, and then each affected organ of state implementing them. So the DG would be responsible, as he does with the treasury regulations, with the public service regulations, which are all transversal across each department of state. Here there will be another set of transversal regulations, but the DG is responsible. If in terms of 22.1A, this group of people is responsible, then we have the implementation of this act taken away from the heads of department and given to a group of people with an additional group of people to help in this momentous task, which would be problematic because it does smell like a super intelligent structure, octopus-like within each of the departments. So that's a concern. So there must be clarity of exactly what it is they should be doing, who implements this act. And that goes to the other unanswered question, who drafts the manual which we should go out. Then to make things more complex and part of the same picture, under 22.2, this panel is given the power to make rules. Now, these rules are, I'm not sure what rules are, but there are a number of issues. First of all, whether we can delegate secondary legislation to a panel, if these are regulations. If they're not regulations, how do they relate to in the hierarchy of laws? We've got the Act, we've got the regulations in terms of 7, we've got the regulations in terms of 43, and now we've got, then we've got the manual, and then we've got the rules. How do they fit? Now, what is the purpose of these rules? If these people are in charge of supervising the transversal application of the Act in each and every department, and they have the power of rules, the only thing I can make them akin to is the functions of the Treasury. So this would be like Treasury directives, and the Treasury does that, it issues directive to each department, and everyone jumps as high as they tell them to. They're very, nobody violates the Treasury directive. Now, surprisingly enough, the Treasury directive doesn't have any status in law. It's not a regulation. I mean, it could be ground for misconduct if an official doesn't follow it. But a Treasury directive is not, in certain cases, enabled by the Exchange Act, for instance, vis-à-vis the Reserve Bank. But, so what are these rules? Clarity, one. Two, concern. The concern is that if you have the power to issue those type of things, this becomes a super department. Third, Mr. Chairman, last point. We need to read legislation, draft legislation, against the backdrop of the reality we work in. I heard at the tail end of what Mr. Landers said about the integrity of the Committee of Intelligence. But the cabinet practice in South Africa in the past 15 years is that there are two super departments, the Treasury and the Department of Intelligence. No
and you can ask around, no cabinet memorandum goes through if one of these two departments today objects to it. If you want to kill something at cabinet level, you lobby intelligence or you lobby treasury. Those are the killers. Those are the super departments. Against that backdrop.
May I interrupt you,
yeah.
Member?
Why?
I think you must speak for yourself.
Well, I'm making submissions. You may not agree.
You have now suggested that at a cabinet level certain things are happening. Yes. And I think that I wanted myself to distance myself from that.
Okay, you will do it when you speak. You cannot.
I would suggest that you put that as that your meaning of your understanding.
That's my understanding, sure. That's my understanding. These are all my understanding. It is my understanding about the hierarchy of the source of law.
What you put it down as a fact.
Well, this is my understanding of the fact. I'm relating to you what is my understanding of the constitutional practice of this country at this point in time. And it's something that as a member of parliament I should be entitled to speak to freely without being censored. I mean, the constitutional practice of how a cabinet operates, it's a subject of books, discussions, and public debate. So allow me to bring this very relevant element in our discussions, because we have a very powerful state of secrecy apparatus in this country. And that's something that we need to be alive to.
I'm going to disturb you, Honourable Member. I'm not going to allow you to use this platform.
You are not agreeing with what I'm saying. This is not the reason.
Yes, but I'm not going to allow you to use this platform to start criticizing the executive on issues.
You're not allowing me to speak because I criticize the executive. Are you losing perspective, Mr. Chairman?
You're making allegations here, purporting it to be fact.
Well, there are 9 ANC members representing the executive on the other side of the bench. You can defend the executive. It's not your role as a chairman to interrupt me in what is a constitutional analysis because you do not agree with what I'm saying. This is an abuse of your privileges as a chairman. Allow me to finish my argument. I'm not wasting time. I'm making submissions which are relevant. Allow me to finish.
You're making submissions and where? The submissions that you're making are not based on fact. I'm going to stop you. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, if members of parliament were to stop every time they say something which is not factually correct, this place would come down to a grounding halt.
Honourable Abrasini, I will...
In this committee and in
Honourable
this house...
Honourable Abrasini, I am talking.
I was talking before. Can somebody else chair while you and I debate? Because you are debating from the chair.
Honourable Abyssinia, I'm going to caution you now, because I'd like you to listen to me first. If you are going to reflect negatively here on the way the cabinet operates, then I'm going to caution you. Okay? If you're going to talk in general that what your ideas are, that's fine. But you are submitting here issues as if they are fact. If that is your perception, that's fine, then say so. But don't submit it here as if it is a fact. Okay? You may proceed. I'm going to intervene, and I'm going to stop you if you continue proceeding on what I've asked you not to do.
Mr. Chairman, I wish the record to reflect that I think you're abusing your powers, you're censoring content. You're not backing on the rules to do so. I can submit facts as I understand it. Nowhere in no parliament, in no committee, as a member of parliament held to the standard of truth. Okay, if that were the case, we could shut down the business of politics, which might be something desirable to do. So, but let me continue my argument, if I may. We are creating an organ of state here, to which we are giving powers. And that's my last piece of argument. I think that we have the responsibility of considering the powers of this organ of state as described here within the broader aspect of the constitutional materiality of this country. If we add to the powers of the Treasury substantially, we would be aware and sensitive to the fact that the Treasury would exercise a much greater impact in the constitutional and administrative dynamics. If we add to the powers of the Planning Commission would exercise a much greater role of leadership within government. With this piece of legislation, against the backdrop of the present constitutional dynamics, we are increasing enormously the powers of the intelligence apparatus within the dynamics of government and the leadership that it can exercise on issues. The spread of issues on which it can exercise, it can only be determined by what has happened in the past. And as a matter of public record, the Chairman, I'm alerting you to the need that you may have to object to what I'm saying. As a matter of public record reported by the press, the intelligence apparatus already got involved itself in the unmaking of a president and the making of a new president. So that as far as we're dealing. The more powerful it becomes, the more we're dealing. I've identified legal and constitutional concerns, and I leave it to you all. And perhaps that's all.
The Honourable Bainier, and then the Honourable Tinsmans.
Thank you, Chair. I must, before I make my point, speak in support of the Honourable Mario Ambrosini. Surely he has the right to make a statement, and you as Chair should not censor him, but rather persuade him through argument that he is wrong, if that indeed is what you believe.
Well, Mania, I consider that I've ruled on that matter. Will you please get on with your submission?
Thank you, Chair. Let me move to 22D. The Honourable Landers addressed my concern and talked about the report to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. I'm still concerned that the Classification Review Panel would report to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence precisely because it routinely meets in closed session. My concern would be that in this case, depending, of course, on how we legislate the functions, but as the document currently stands, it seems to me that in this case you would be dealing not with classified information, but reports on compliance with classification rules and also reviews of classification status. So that's the first point. The second point is that there's some precedent in the past for this kind of information to be disclosed publicly. And you will recall in the ISS submission, for example, that the Auditor General in, I think, 2007 and 2008 reported on security information weaknesses in the NIA itself, where in 2007 the Auditor General found that sensitive transaction codes had not been properly locked down and there was a failure to implement critical network and security monitoring facilities and tools. This information in the past has been made public, and I think it's in the public interest that that kind of information be out in the open. So I think perhaps we should come back to this matter and reconsider.
Honourable Smudge, do you want to take the Honourable Mania there?
No, on the contrary, I thought that was absolutely excellent. I want to support Dr. Ambrosini in his insistence that we are clear, that we achieve clarity in our own minds about what the legal status is of the panel, of the manual, because he is correct. That's why I started today's session off asking you to assist me to understand what it means. We do have to be clear whether we are looking at a government panel, in essence, independent but advisory, a government panel ensuring that government structures are complying with a manual or regulations on how they must classify. That is one kind of an animal, it is true, and then a completely different kind of animal would be the kind that has a higher status of independence, that on behalf of the citizenry checks that government departments are not abusing their powers. And if I understand the ANC's thinking, it does in fact seek to prevent, if not the abuse of power, does seek to make sure that classification is occurring properly. That's how I understand 22.1a. And that is a praiseworthy goal. I'm just not sure that we have thought it through and that the correct structure and status is there yet. And I would think that this could benefit from some more thinking, and perhaps if you would address us some more on this. But you confirmed that 22.1a intends to work as a check and balance on the abusive classification. All right, and once we're sure of that, then we can start thinking through what must follow. And whereas the receipt of the 10-year reviews is a more mechanistic, almost clerical function, but you would want to address that question you yourself raised, what happens if they don't check everything after the 10 years? We must still figure out why they would be receiving once a year all reviews on status if people are only reviewing every decade. And may I just remind you, through your chair, one other thing that is in our submission, which I don't want to lose sight of, and that is, it has been our concern, we all know from the Capitals Ministry that a lot of overclassification was done. My concern is those documents are still sitting around with four levels of classification stamped on them. And because under the MIST there were no particular criteria, we can be quite sure that a lot of material is incorrectly classified. Well, even the Capitals Ministry said so. Now, what are we going to do about that mass of information? Which is why we proposed in our set of amendments, we put in a proviso under 22 sub 2. We said the first 10-year period can kick off on the effective date of this Act, provided that a review of all material classified under the MIST must be conducted at the commencement of the Act. And failing such review, all information is declassified. Because one unfortunately anticipates that it is going to be not going to be feasible, in fact, to review it all. And then given the constitutional imperative of openness, then you have to deem them all declassified, I think. It's a problem that I think we have to grapple with one way or the other.
Well, members, before you talk, allow me to remind you of a few things. First of all, you need to consider that you're dealing with classified information. The particular section we deal with is a panel. So when you start to create and bring people in or involve other entities, you need to take into consideration that those people need to have the necessary vetting status in order to deal with this information. Any person that you bring in on this panel needs to be vetted because of the nature of the... Well, if you don't agree, Honourable Member, then you will put your argument and your debate. I'm just telling you my understanding that this panel would have to be a panel of people that's going to have to be vetted, whoever they are. The thing you also need to take into consideration is that I think the concession came because of concerns that were raised about the minister's involvement in this this reviewing process. That's where the concession came, the way I understood the ANC's point. They were trying to accommodate the concern that was raised that the minister was involved in the reviewing process and he would later also be involved in the appeal process and that he could find himself in a conflict of interest. The third thing I thought I might draw your attention to, and this is what I understood when the Honourable Landers first raised the document, that the thing was not written in stone. It was put forward as a discussion document. And what I don't get now is concrete proposals as to how we should go about amending the proposal of the ANC. I think the Honourable Lawrence has made it quite clear that they were not, the ANC was not set. They had not reserved themselves that this is the final document. I think also the Honourable Dean Smuts has analysed the thing correctly, that the proposal was made in good faith in order to accommodate what was a problem being raised by many people. And this was a genuine attempt to try and address that. So I don't hear at this stage. Obviously, one would want to have today have heard that there were some genuine inputs as to how this thing should be amended or what really should be, how the panel should look. And one could then go through the stages. Firstly, what would be the functions? What is it that the thing is going to do? And one would have liked to have heard from other parties what their proposals would be. What is it that you expect this panel to do? And then later on, also hear who you think should serve on this panel, and the question of whether they should themselves be the architects that will determine their own procedure is another matter. I thought those would be things that we would hear from today. So I thought I'd just raise that honourable on this.
We appreciate that, and we move along on that basis. I had picked up one or two suggestions, though, although they came in the form of questions. That in fact the question was a proposal. For example, he's not here, but I think it's good that I should refer to this, where Mr. Ambrosini said, well, instead of a manual, and he set out the dangers inherent in manuals, shouldn't there be regulations? So that's one positive proposal we can think about. Because how do you don't determine what's in the manual, and they could put anything there. And he gave reasons for that. The other positive proposal that came from Mr. Ambrosini, chairperson, is the fact that perhaps we should look at, instead of a manual and even regulations, what Treasury uses, which is directives. Their status in law is up there, but you dare contravene a Treasury directive, you're in serious trouble, chairperson. I mean, if you speak to DGs, they'll tell you that that's the last thing you want to do. So maybe that's something we can look at. And then, chairperson, Mr. Swart raised the issue of whether we should give the panel the power to conduct reviews. And you correctly pointed out that this arose as a result of concerns about the role of the minister. Okay, so we tried to take him out. And then later, Mr. Ambrosini himself posed the question, well, what if the head of organ of state or the organ of state doesn't conduct reviews? Who's there to monitor that? And that should be the role of the panel. Please don't ask me what must happen if the panel doesn't conduct the review of the reviews. Then we're in serious trouble. Which could happen.
Then you go to court.
And do what? Tell them they have to conduct their work. Shouldn't we just remove them? Because that's the other thing I wanted us to raise and think about. What happens if a panelist or the panelist collective does something wrong? Should we not also put in the law steps for their removal? Because Steve Swart correctly tries to address how best the panel should actually be established, what steps you should take, the kind of people who serve on the panel, and that kind of thing, and he made reference to ODAC's document. But we're dealing with human beings, and in most legislation, when you establish something like this, you must also consider, what do you do when one member of the panel, or the entire panel, does something wrong? Should you not put in place steps to have that person or the entire panel replaced? Be- Because in South Africa, we have a tendency of running to court and saying, tell them they can't remove me. I have my rights. So that's the other point. I thought Steve Swart made a very important point, Chivas, and that perhaps in our envisaging the role of the panel, perhaps you could look at making it similar to the AG. What is the AG? The AG doesn't do the actual accounting. The AG audits stuff. And when the AG finds something wrong, he says to you, you will need to fix this. And perhaps that's where we should leave the panel. There may be a bit of sense of discomfort about the panel finding something wrong and then the panel now actually doing the work which we've tasked other people to do. Just a thought. Who drafts the manual? All right, fine. I thought the bill dealt with who drafts the manual, Chivas. But all right, if it doesn't, the other points Mr. Amrosini raised, which you and him had a little onderonsi chair, we'd like to address you, but in his presence. I hope you'll allow us, Chivas.
Things are allowed.
All right. Chair, the Honorable Dean Smuts is correct. There is a mass of classified information, a lot of it emanating from the apartheid era, and maybe even before, which needs to be dealt with. And you see, when people speak about this bill, these are the things they either conveniently omit to address, or they're ignorant of. It is a fact, Chairperson, that we have on our statutes a 1982 Act of Parliament derived from Britain, which is still in place. Now, the British, their Act of Parliament that we borrowed in 1982 has undergone more than several amendments. Our 1982 Act still exactly the same as it was when it was passed in this place. Now, you ask yourself, I mean, is that tenable? Is that okay? So when people say we shouldn't be dealing with this kind of thing, then address that particular issue. We believe we have to address it because information has been classified since then and never been declassified. And Dean is correct. What are we going to do about that? Who's going to address that? And how? Whether it's this panel that's going to do that, Chairperson, I'm not sure. I am aware, Chairperson, that the Minister Lindiwe Sisulu at one point was Minister of Intelligence, commissioned an investigation into that particular matter, amongst other things, and they came up with certain proposals, and maybe, Chair, the JSCI would need to go back to that commission's report and just look at whether they addressed that issue, and if so, what steps can be taken in this bill find a solution to that particular problem. It's a pressing problem, Chairperson, because even the National Archives have a massive headache as to how this particular problem is going to be dealt with. You're right, Chairperson. The proposals we put forward were set in stone. It was designed to initiate and stimulate a discussion on this matter. And we appreciate the points that have been raised. They've also raised new issues that maybe we hadn't even thought of. And so there's room then for further engagement on this particular matter.
Honourable members, I see you are all very comfortable with your arrangement of further engagement and listening to one another, but are we taking this process forward? I mean, is nobody going to be proposing any amendments here? Or are we just going to get stuck on this thing? Surely, if you have proposals, would you like the ANC? Would you like me to instruct the ANC to come up with additional proposals? Are you not going to put any proposals on the table? I'm inviting you to be to take part in the process here. Or don't you have any proposals that yes, Honourable Fischler?
I'm worried about Honourable Member Ambrosina. He leaves this debate and he goes outside time and again. Then he comes back and brings some controversial issues. And then how are we going, without even knowing what was being debated and what was being agreed on, then he comes up and comes and oppose everything. Now, are we going to allow that? He's going out now, and it's the second time he's going out. And then he comes after a lengthy debate, and then he comes and opposes what he has not even had with the agreement.
I've got the Honourable Sonto, then the Honourable Swart, and then the Honourable Rondo.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think members of on the other side understands it clearly that the ANC is putting its position in good faith, and we are inviting inputs from yourselves, therefore. And I take it from the point that you are proposing, Chairperson, that if the ANC is instructed by this committee to make proposals, let it be from the other side, so that there should be that dynamism of comparing notes with an intention of coming up with a solution. I think this process of developing this bill should be a participatory process, because really you make it difficult for the ANC if you are just coming with questions instead of suggestions. If we would all of us come with suggestions on the basis of our knowledge, on the wealth of our intelligence, I'm sure we'll take this process forward. Thank you, Chair.
I think it was the Honourable Swart after that, and then Honourable Landers, and then the Honourable Mania.
Chair, because this is such a very important issue relating to the panel, I think it's important that we are engaging one another, and I think it's been very useful this morning. I have raised a number of suggestions to wording, and I can continue doing that. Maybe what has been useful is the discussion around what this panel is going to do. And I think until we can put various options with our understanding, is it firstly going to be, as I understand it, as the wording is at the moment, the head of the organ of state is the person that does the appeal or review. This then goes higher up to this panel for a review of that review. Now, if that is the suggestion, the alternative is to allow this review panel, give it the specific powers of overlooking, of reconsidering that organ of state, but then we've got to have the discussion as to whether, and it's been touched on, whether citizens should also have access to that, and I think that is a concrete proposal as to we need to discuss that. The citizen that is aggrieved by the decision can appeal to the head of the organ of state. As I understood the present formulation, if they're dissatisfied, it would go to the Minister of Intelligence. Now, we're trying to replace the Minister with this panel. And is it not then correct that the citizen should have some recourse to the panel as well? And that we need to finalise that before we come up with concrete wording. But as to the second, that's one issue we can suggest wording. As to the second issue of the appointment, now there I can give specific, as I did earlier, that we can consider an option where we have in the ANC document 23 sub 2, which is not necessarily, I'm not rejecting that, I'm saying here's another suggestion where you say suitable qualification of experience in law and must have an understanding of national security and related matters. We can say on the basis of their, I agree, suitable qualification, but on the basis of their knowledge, experience and involvement pertaining to access to information, constitutional law and national security. That's a concrete proposal for us to consider. I'm not married to it. I think we are all just trying to find some one another. We can take useful suggestions from this previous document, such as how long does the board or the panel serve, a four-year period, should they be eligible for reappointment. These are all details that I've got wording here that we can discuss. The suggestion from Mr. Landers, or the concern, what happens if they don't perform their function? Well, then there's a suggestion for a clause that when do you cease to become a member? On their resignation, or if requested by the minister to resign for good cause shown, such as not doing their duty. That's specific wording. If they fail to attend meetings, or if they're disqualified in terms of the act, such as unrehabilitated, insolvent, and those criteria. So that's specific wording that we can provide, that we can look at, that might be helpful. But I think at the first stage, we need to finalize the debate as to exactly what this panel is going to do. And I think that, or do we just put options? Either it's a purely governmental review panel looking at the organ of state and reviewing that, or should members of the public also be able to access that review panel, which I think is probably more desirable. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Landers and the Honourable Mania and the Honourable Tinsma.
Yeah. Chair, I was actually addressing the point you made, and because I saw both David Mania and Dean Smuts shaking their heads, but I don't see how you can say this panel must review classification and such like, and for them not to be vetted. Not to be vetted. Our view is that clearly they'd have to be vetted. I can't see how you can have someone on there who hasn't been security vetted. So we appreciate your intervention in that regard. The issues raised by David Mania about the reports of the panel, we can look at that. I think I understand what he's saying. What he's saying is that in their reports to the general public or to Parliament, it shouldn't contain details of classified information, but rather whether the organs of state have complied and whether they haven't complied. Who are those who haven't complied? What steps have been taken to deal with such matters? And also perhaps the issues now raised by Steve Swart that a panelist or panelists have been removed for whatever reason, because I can't imagine that information should be kept from the public. If a panelist is going to be removed, that should be made public. Those are interesting points, Chair. How about Dean Swart?
Honourable Landers, you were talking. Are you prepared to wait that to hear the Honourable Dinsma?
Thank you so much, Chair, because I just don't want to lose the thread, and I won't, in fact, be long. Just on the matter of the vetting, maybe just both Mr. Mania and I believe that you should not be vetted, for example. Let me place it on record. That your committee, sir, your Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, we don't believe you should be sitting behind closed doors. You exist because the Constitution asks, for the sake of accountability in transparency that such a committee should be created, so your door should be opened. We also believe you are members of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa and that you should not have to be vetted. You are the legislative authority of this country. You shouldn't have to be vetted. That's for placing on the record. It follows that we certainly don't think that the people sitting on an oversight panel should be vetted either. The thoughts I want to leave you with are just these. You've invited us, and my colleague sitting opposite me has pointed to a duty on us to give you proposals on the panel also, which we must accept. And let me just say, two things will be the starting point for us. One is that form follows function. How we construct this panel depends upon what it is that it does. We have now confirmed a few points on what it's supposed to do. Form follows function. Secondly, let's not forget the origin of this, which the chairman has just reminded us of. It flows from the ANC's concern that if the minister has any kind of a review function on classification, then a reasonable apprehension of bias would arise, which would preclude him from hearing appeals. So perhaps we should separate the two things. If you are amenable to putting a judge in for the appeal function, which is clause 25, then that takes care of that whole difficulty already, do you see? Because if that's the appeal function, then there's no longer the difficulty that you described in your last submission, the reasonable apprehension of bias. Then perhaps, but I speak speculatively, then perhaps your panel could indeed be appointed by the minister. It then needs a different kind of legal status. But form follows function, and let's separate the different things that need. A review is one thing, an appeal is another thing. That's just to assist myself, and we will go and think about it. And then just may I just say, because my friend Dr. Ambrosini was out of the room, but he is now back, and he and Mr. Fichler can talk. Mr. Fichler felt unhappy that you are sitting in two committees and come in and out.
Point of order on the line? I'm going to go to the Honourable Van Wyk, then the Honourable Landers, and then the Honourable Abrasini. But before I go to the Honourable Van Wyk, if I might just be allowed to say something. You will recall, and I'm repeating myself now because you seem not to have listened to me, at the last meeting last week, I had specifically asked you, Honourable Members, to look at the whole question of review and appeal as it is presently structured in the bill, so that you get an idea when you talk about this review panel what it is you actually want, that you can see the thing in the broader picture, because reviews are different from appeal. Now, I think if you haven't done that, you need to do it. I even said perhaps we need a different a section here that specifically says review and appeal, so that we can get very clearly what it is we are trying to do. Now, if you don't look at the question of appeals and the reviews as it is presently structured in the bill, and you just deal with this panel now, you might start missing the picture what it is that we are actually trying to achieve. The second point on the vetting, Honourable Dean Smuts, this is the law. It's presently called the Intelligence Service Oversight Act. It was a law passed by this Parliament in 1995, 1994, 1996. It was amended. The law specifically says that members of the JSCI must have the necessary vetting, go through the necessary vetting process. I don't know whether you were in Parliament at that time, whether you supported the law. If you did support the law, perhaps you can go on record that you no longer support the law. But that is, unfortunately, the law. If you, you know, we will note that you no longer support the law on that particular point. But unfortunately, that is the law that members of the JSCI are to be vetted, and that the meetings are to be conducted behind closed doors unless the committee decides otherwise. So it's not behind closed doors, and that's the end of the matter. And you will recall, although it wasn't much of a concession, that the process dealing with the appointment of the Inspector General of Intelligence was a very open one. There was nothing secret about it. The public hearings was held in open. The candidates were questioned in open. And that was done by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. So I speak from a legal point, unfortunately, honorable members. And any member on the JSCI that comes there that is not vetted will not be allowed through the door, because he would be breaking the law. On the question of the judge, honorable members, I ask you to be mindful of the fact, if you're going to have judges involved in appeal and review processes, what happens when you go to court? You might find the very same judge sitting on the bench there now dealing with the court process. So just keep in mind the whole question of separation of powers. I am not saying it can't work, but be mindful of the fact that when you start involving judges, you are involving a different department, and there might be, you might want to look into that. The Honourable Fadbeck.
Listen, yes, I also want to start by addressing the issue of vetting. I mean, there's no way that this appeal body, whoever the members are that sit on it, cannot be vetted. They must be vetted. They're working. If you give me an opportunity, Ms. Amania, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. They're working with, they are going to look at classified information themselves. Vetting is not a loyalty test to government. Vetting is something that you do to establish that the person is trustworthy in terms of the kind of information that they deal with. DGs get vetted. And this is an oversight body, as I see it. It's an oversight body in terms of what are the different government departments doing. Are they doing it correctly? And therefore, Mr. Maynard, if a person is not vetted to deal with certain information, how do you expect that would be a responsible process? I think it would just be the responsible thing to do is that these people be vetted. They're working with confidential, secret and top secret documents. We are expected of them to make sure that government is handling these documents in the correct way. Now, you can't start with them not being, breaking the law by not being the people that should be able to deal with those documents. That's on the first step. Chairperson, in terms of the process forward, I think also I want to agree with what members have been saying. Give us opportunity to go back. A lot of things have been said from all sides that we agree on, that we said we can look at. But give us that opportunity to go back and think about some of these things and implement them in some changes. I, for instance, the issue of the report. What do this? Where do they report? That's something that we really can look at. It can be a report like the report coming from the AG on the different departments. It can be the kind of report that gets tabled to Parliament. We see, if you take for instance the report from the AG in terms of the departments. Adherence to the Public Finance Act. It's that kind of report that we talk about. They're not going to report on the secret documents. They're going to report on the compliance, on the non-compliance, the corrective measures that have been taken. If there were cases openly, because remember also, it's most possible that they will be the body that will expose documents that are classified that shouldn't be classified. So they can even report on cases that has been opened and that has been sent to court against officials who have done that. So I would really say, Chairperson, you need to give all of us an opportunity now to go back in terms of this issue, think about it, come back with further proposals, also from the side of the opposition in terms of this issue.
Thank the Honourable Member, the Honourable Launders, then the Honourable Abrasini, then the Honourable Professor Alba.
Chairperson, I had the privilege of serving on the Transitional Executive Council Sub-Council on Intelligence. From there, I was elected to Parliament, and I had the privilege of participating in exhaustive debates on the type of intelligence structures that should service South Africa, given the fact that we had adversaries who were now required to sit together and work together. I also had the privilege of debating with other members of Parliament, including members of the DA, as to whether we should have oversight over these intelligence structures. Unanimously, no one disagreed that they should. And so what we needed to get clear in our minds was the form. Amongst other places we visited was the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate has one of the foremost oversight committees in the world. And we met with senior officials of that committee. They confirmed that Senate is serving on that body of ETED. We also visited Canada. Unlike South Africa and the United States, the Canadians have opted for eminent persons drawn from Canadian society to serve on their oversight body. But again, those eminent persons are vetted. We visited Australia and conducted the same study. The Australians follow the U.S. model. Members of Parliament who are vetted sitting behind closed doors. In fact, when you visit, if you ever have the opportunity, the U.S. Senate, they have a beautiful facility, but you're not allowed inside. You're met at the entrance by security guards. They only allow you in with the necessary permit or identification. So you see, well, let me deal with Britain. You know that for many, many years, decades and centuries, Britain refused to admit that it had intelligence services until they had to come to the unfortunate truth that they do. And when they did, they then started realizing that, well, we would need to follow the rest of the world, and came and looked at our model. And they liked our model. And they've replicated our model in Britain. So you see, Chairperson, there's nothing unusual about what we've done. We've taken the best of the rest of the world, democratic societies, and put it here. Prior to 1995, which is when I was first sworn in to the first JSCI, there had never been oversight and monitoring of our intelligence structures. Mr. Stibber will confirm that for you. So, Chairperson, the meeting of the JSCI behind closed doors and the vetting of members of Parliament is nothing unusual. It's not unique. In fact, it's perfectly in line with other democratic countries. I just thought, Chairperson, that I should make that point. We accept the Honourable Dean Smuts. Maybe she now has a different view, having voted yes. Well, yes, fine, but then you, when it was says those in favour will press the yes button, you press the yes button. We will produce it, yes, yes, as well as your colleagues in the DA, who all pressed the yes button. Fortunately for David Mania and Mr. Stibber, they weren't here.
But Dean Smuts was here on the day that we passed the Intelligence Services Oversight Act, Jefferson.
Okay,
and
rubbing it in now, please.
All right, thank you, Jefferson.
Are you finished, Honourable Honours? Honourable Abrasini, in the spirit that the meeting is now developed in, can you continue? In the spirit that we have now developed, you may continue.
Mr. Chairman, you bid me to be amusing. I don't have the same capacity for amusement, but on this spirit, let me... I'm a dull, dreary, yes. In that spirit, let me, if I may through you, address the Honourable Frickler, saying you're right, I apologize. It's not pleasure but duty which forces me to. And I stand open to your criticism if anything I say is not constructive, intelligent, and appropriate on account of my intermittent assistance. Now, I think what we're dealing with here is unpacking the first word of this document, independent, because it says there is hereby established an independent review committee. And the issue of vetting comes in the complex formula of what makes it independent. Now, I think, as I say, that it should be a government, an internal government mechanism to ensure government compliance with government own regulation rather than a mechanism through which affected citizens can find a redress. But even within that characterization, there may be value in a juxtaposition of interest where you don't have the same person checking himself. Now, what is the same person? We often, constantly, make reference to the intelligence community. You, Mr. Chairman, are much more acquainted with that community than perhaps most of us, if not all of us. And you will know that it's a tight community. It develops its own mindset. It develops its own perceptions. And those perceptions time leads to mistake. I mean, it is a fact of history that the strongest based intelligence community known to mankind was convinced that there were, if one takes an optimistic reading of the matter, was convinced that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So things go wrong, and they go wrong because it's a wolf pack mindset, and then people follow other people, and what is repeated enough time becomes from rumor to suspicious, then it becomes fact, the very fact, Mr. Chairman, that you don't want me to bring to the attention of this committee. So if that is a concern, and I submit it should be, we need to bring people from the outside of government. Now, the vetting mechanism. I don't want to become personal here, but I can just relate my experience as the Honorable Landers related his. I mean, I had a top secret security clearance granted to me by the police after investigation, etc. And they started investigating when I first arrived here in 1990 because I was quote-unquote controversial. Then in 96, President Mbeki said, no foreigners in cabinet. And Buttigieg said, I'm going to walk out. So it must have a security clearance. And again, the security clearance. That's not good enough. It must be vetted by the NIA. So order and intelligence investigation on me in 1996. When I left in 2004, that process had not been completed and I never got vetted or unvetted. Now, in my case, I was in, so it was a condition of getting me out if the vetting was negative. But had it been a condition of office, I would have waited 8 years before I got in. So you shouldn't give the keys to the gate. You can't put the fox in charge of the chicken coop. So perhaps what we should look at, because this is a mechanism which controls on how things are done. If it is independent, if it is somebody looking over the intelligence apparatus rather than intelligence apparatus looking onto itself, we should have stops, we should have the police doing it. Also because there is a difference, as you know, Mr. Chairman, between the top secret security clearance given by the police and the vetting by the NIA. The police standard is that you haven't, that there is no evidence or suspicion that you've done anything wrong. The intelligence standard is that there is no suspicion that you may become a threat and do something wrong in the future. So it's much broader. So it becomes a much more, a more flimsy state. Then there is another thing. In the vetting process, we are members of parliament, and I don't know how it's done in parliament and how intensive, but there is always an investigation. Investigation reveals information. It's not necessarily revealing things that are wrong, but everyone may have or has something in his life that doesn't particularly want to have exposed. So for the intelligence to research those who are looking over their shoulders, acquire information, and being in the position, if it happens, to have the investigators being at their behest or being beheld to them, is not advisable. So that's my contribution.
The Honourable Professor and then the Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to concur with you that the vetting is indeed important and it is a law. For instance, I myself was vetted when I served in the JCI a few years ago. So I think it's crucial, peremptory. Secondly, Chair, the concern about the judge heading the review panel sitting this time round in judgment in a particular case, this I think we can maybe solve by getting a retired judge to be involved. Thanks, Chair.
But it's all work in progress, Honourable Members, I take it. The Honourable Swart.
Chair, just through you, I'd like to ask Mr. Ambrosini, when he commented on the panel being a governmental panel and the thinking there, because I'm just trying to get clarity on, and I appreciate what you said about looking at the appeal and review mechanisms. If we can get some degree of consensus as to what we think this panel should do, and I'd like to hear him where he suggested it should only, clarity purely on where he said it should be a governmental panel, i.e., if I understood him correctly, citizens should not have access to that. What his motivation is that, because maybe it could persuade me to think that is the way to go. And then if we could reach consensus on that point, that's, we could immediately start formulating what the panel should do and how narrow it is, whether it's a purely a review of the previous decision of the state organ or whether citizens should have access to that review panel as well. Thank you, Chair.
You want to go into the question of internal compliance and the...
No, I would like to address the question that...
Yeah, which is the answer that he's asking.
That's great. And what exactly... Mr. Ambrosini said that he is... If I understood him correctly, he said his preference was a governmental panel. You said there are two functions that they can play. And I'd just like to tease that out and just get clarity on his thinking on that. It would seem to be that he constrains it to a review of the organ of state that conducts the review. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that this entire proposal does not add value to the bill necessarily, but working within the parameters in which it is put. The basic rule, I think we all agree, that he who creates the rights should not adjudicate them. He who creates the parameters should not adjudicate under the parameters. To a certain extent, as proposed here, there is a regulatory function in this group of people. They don't only review, but they also create the rules under which the review takes place. And they need to, quote-unquote, work with the organs of state. They're not just there to, as I understand the spirit, to bang them over the head if they do something wrong. They're there to ensure that there is compliance. So again, I draw the analogy with what the Treasury does in respect of all departments, we would not allow the Treasury or an organ of the Treasury to adjudicate rights which arise under Treasury regulations. So my strong submission is that when it comes to declassification or verification of the of conditions for classification to be done on the basis of a challenge brought in by anyone, could be also by government, because a government department may want to access documents held by another government department and may have an interest in declassifying things. That needs to be done in an appeal procedure which is based on quasi-judicial proceedings. And that leads us back to the entire discussions we had about PAIA, non-PAIA, and the provisions of the bill. So this cannot be in substitution to what is already in the bill, as it is, or as we may wish to supplement it once we discuss and finalize the relationship with PAIA. So if it is not to the exclusions of that, it can only relate to government, ensuring that government does as government is supposed to do, which raises the concern that I raised before, because with the power of ensuring comes the power of telling people what to do, and it's real power. So for that real power not to be misused, the issue of the independence is crucial. There must be just a position. It must be the people on the panel should be vetted or not vetted, members who are not members of the intelligence community. Now, if they're not members of the intelligence community, I can see the doubt in Mr. Lander's face. How can they know? But that's the test. If one cannot convince a person of good and sound mind and character of the need of classifying things, if a person of good and sound character cannot buy into the mindset of the securocrats, cannot see the reasons that the securocrats and their tight community see, then perhaps there shouldn't be them. We need to break the mindset. For as long as there are citizens who are concerned about security, people of integrity, people can rely on. I mean, if Mr. Landers were there, I would be very confident, even though he's not a securocrat. There are lots of people we can think about. Well, yeah, see, but you were vetted before you start talking to me. Now you may jeopardize the security clearance.
The Honorable Mania. The Honorable Mania.
Thank you, Chair, to be heard. Just on the, I mean, certainly the proposal, the idea of using a retired judge in any kind of appeal mechanism, I think is a very positive suggestion, and I think that we should look at that very carefully. On the question of vetting, or the proposal to vet members of the classification review panel, I mean, the outcome that you're trying to achieve in this case is really some kind of standard of conduct, and surely it would be possible to achieve that without necessarily obliging those members to go through a vetting procedure. In the case of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, for example, I mean, the idea that members of Parliament are vetted by the very institution they are responsible for scrutinizing seems to me to be wrong in principle. I mean, why should...
Smudge, will you behave yourself?
Why should the NIA or Crime Intelligence or one of the intelligence services who are themselves, in many cases, leaking classified information or who are involved in misconduct be telling Parliament which kind of individuals are appropriate to provide scrutiny and oversight of them?
Chair, if I could just, if I could finish.
Is there a point of order, honourable members? There is a point of order, honourable Mania, would you just...
Chair, NIA or any intelligence structure doesn't say to Parliament this is the kind or the mould of the person we require to serve on the JSCI. That's not how it works. Ask Mr. Stibber. He's gone through the process. And your other colleagues who served on the committee. Your leader was requested to submit name of a person. So the name of the person is submitted. He or she presented himself to NIA and the security vetting was conducted. There's no way that NIA says to Parliament or to the DA, for heaven's sake, I would like Trollop or Zilla to say, yes, that's what happened. That they told me, this is the kind of person we want, that's ridiculous.
Honourable members, can we? Honourable members, the Honourable Honours has complained about the inaccuracy of the statements of the Honourable Mania, which I think the Honourable Landers is perfectly correct. Honourable Mania, you... I'm not sure what your status was when you were in the Navy, Mania. But you will recall that the Navy, everything in the Navy was restricted, at the very least. There was nothing in the Navy that was not restricted. All the documents started off as being restricted, and under the myth, that was the lowest form of classification then. When all other departments had already abandoned that form of classification, there was no other department that was bound by the myth that was using restricted as a form of classification. But are you finished, Honourable Mania? You're not finished. Okay, proceed.
Chair, I'd be delighted to ask the Honourable Stibber to tell us about his security vetting, but I suspect that that information is classified. Well, then I will ask him and report back, Chair. Just on the case of the Honourable Landers cited several examples. He used the case of the US and Australia. Now, I'm not exactly certain of the case in Canada. The Honourable Landers is probably familiar with that case, but I do remember discussing this matter with the Inspector General for Intelligence in Canada years ago, and she thought that the idea that members of Parliament were vetted before they served or took up a position on the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence was frankly absurd.
The lady is, whoever it is you're referring to, Honourable Member, is very far away, but I hope she hears you. Because I'm not sure whether you are representing her accurately, but for her to express the view of the South African situation, if that is in fact what she did do, I think would be most inappropriate in the circumstances. Oversight models, I might remind you, in case you don't know, differ from country to country. You would be surprised to know that the South African model is somewhat unique, and so you are not talking about apples and apples here. This oversight model in some of the Western countries, for example, the members of Parliament do not do any investigation. They have professionals that do it. They've got accountants, auditors, lawyers. Those are the people that go and visit your intelligence agencies and scratch around and see, and they report back then. That's not our model. So there are different models all around the world, and I think it would be for you, Honourable Mania, to suggest that the Canadian model is exactly the same as South Africa. In any event, the laws also differ. So there's a whole range of things you need to take into account. Honourable Landers, you wanted to be heard?
Just to emphasize the point you reminded us to bear in mind, Chairperson, that applies as much to the DA, Mr. Swart, and Mr. Ambrosini, as it does to us. That is, we need to look carefully at a separate review function and an appeal function. So it seems that we have agreement there, and we will look at that.
Abra Senior has now left, and I wanted to. Yes. I thought I might address him on a couple of issues, but I don't think it is necessary for him to be here. The issue is to, or perhaps there was a perception created that our intelligence community has got some form of personality, and he was trying to philosophize here about what our intelligence community is. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that our intelligence communities, be they crime intelligence, be they defense intelligence, be they the civilian intelligence that is headed by the Minister of State Security, these things are all governed by law. I don't see any personality in the law that the Honorable Mania is talking about, because he was implying that the intelligence community has developed this personality of secrecy. And I just wanted it to be clear. I don't know how you look for the personality of an intelligence community. Where do you find it? Are you able to interview this personality? It's much like the personality of the Kaiser Chiefs or the soccer clubs, you know, does it really have a personality? So I think, you know, for the sake of the media and for the sake of those people that are interested in what's going on, we must be clear, the intelligence community is governed by law. And if the perception was created here that it somehow just comes up somewhere and creates a personality and then moves along, I thought I might correct that on the personality issue.
See, the point about personality that really intrigues me is less the secrecy than, if you recall, the minister's submission. The intelligence community believed at one stage that we were under threat from a coup sponsored by Michael Jackson.
You believe that. You believe that. You are really believe that.
But you want us to believe them about other things. Well, if you want to believe something like that, you go ahead. Honourable members, I've given you time to have your fun. Your minute is over.
And by the way, that was after he died.
Honourable members, I see you seem to now have exhausted what you are capable of producing on a Friday. I want to appeal to you, honourable members. It's very nice we can sit and discuss, and I'm sure we'll become very friendly with each other if we sit and discuss this panel and further discuss the panel. But I think I would like to, if we are going to adjourn on the understanding that people are going to come forward with proposals, written ones, and submit them to one another, so that at the next meeting we can identify what it is that you are concerned about, what it is that you would like to see under this particular clause, and how you see the whole question of review and appeal. Would that be asking too much of you, honourable members? Because I can see that we have reached a stalemate here on the thing. We've looked, you've identified certain concerns amongst yourselves, and I think let's try and address those things now. Do I hear somebody moving? Or is somebody going to move? That the various parties produce a document. It does not have to be in any drafting form on how you feel about this thing, so that we can agree that these documents be circulated within the next week,
so that when we meet again, we can talk from an informed position. Otherwise, we are going to go on and on and on talking about this thing. We need to get some concrete things now in written form. I recognize the Honorable Professor and the Honorable Sonta. The Honorable Professor.
Chair, may I move that we do exactly what you're saying?
The Honorable Sonta and the Honorable Swat.
Chair, I stand in support of that.
Thank you. Honorable Swat.
Chair, from my side, I will present what I've already suggested in writing as well. And I think it's a good idea as quickly as possible. Would you be able to give us an idea of the program, Chair? Remember, as a next issue, considering we're going to adjourn, have you got feedback as to our last suggestions from the parties last week as to the extension of the life of the committee and our sit-ins? Is it scheduled for next Friday, or is that the initial program, Chair? Thank you.
Honourable members, let's on the question of circulating the information, would it be unreasonable to say that the information, the documents are to reach the various parties by Tuesday morning? Then the issue as to next meeting, I would like to look into that matter, Honourable Members, because as things stand, the program, I think the next meeting is scheduled for Friday. I would like to look and see whether it's not possible for us to meet before then. If I would be allowed to come back, I will obviously take into account all the other commitments that the members have before making, and it might well be that it will be one of the afternoons again that we sit with the permission. If the House is sitting, one will have to look at what the issues are there, if there are issues of voting. But if I would be allowed to look into that matter and then report back as early as Monday on what I see the position. Regarding the request for an extension, I have written the letter and I have forwarded to the House Chair. I have had informal discussions with the House Chair. There seems to be, in principle, no objection to a further extension. We have not been forwarded yet to the date. I'm not sure whether the matter had gone to the Chief Whip's forum. I'm sure that it would go to one of those. Those are one of the powers to be that we had raised last week. Yeah, well, it's one. You know, when one speaks of those powers to be, one is incorporating a whole lot of role players here that have to have a say in the matter until the resolution is finally tabled in the House, where there would either be consensus that the resolution should be passed in that form, or there would have to be a vote on the thing. But normally that doesn't happen because it goes through all the various processes. So, Honourable Members, I don't have an answer. As soon as I do have an answer, I will report back to you. But I can tell you, in principle, I have been told that there should be no problem to further extension, if that is what the committee is in fact asking. Honourable Members, if there is no further business, and I see no further hands, then this meeting will stand adjourned.